Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. Aaron Rye shot a 5-under par 65 in the final round of the PGA Championship, finishing 9-under for the tournament and winning by 3 strokes. It was the Englishman's first major. Rye becomes the first Englishman to win the tournament in 109 years. The Cleveland Cavaliers are heading to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since 2018. They rout the Detroit Pistons 125-94 in Game 7. Donovan Mitchell led the way with 26. Jared Allen chipped in 23, and Evan Mobley had 21-12 in the win. The Cleveland Guardians took round one of the Ohio Cup, beating the Cincinnati Reds 10-3. The Guards hit 6 home runs in the game and took the series 2-1. The Columbus Crew has fired head coach Henrik Rydström. This one's sponsored by Germain Toyota for unbeatable service and sales. Visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road or online at germaintoyota.net.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he's handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Monday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Bake is here. Isaiah is here. Loaded up on a Monday, short week for a lot of people, Monday edition. A lot of people turn this into the big four-day weekend. You get your Friday, get your Monday. Hard to believe we're here already with Memorial Day weekend, but indeed that we are. I spent the entire weekend in Canton. Friday night, Bootsy had games up in Canton with lacrosse tournament, and then on Saturday, we had Beamsy and Bootsy playing all day up there. Ran into Bob. We actually played Bob's team in the semifinals. Beamsy's team did, played Bob's team in the semifinals, and it was great seeing him, and that was great. And then NBC was all set to play on Sunday in the tournament. So it was basically a full weekend in Canton, and we're in the second half of the first game. He plays attack. So if you're not familiar with the cross, what would be the best way to describe it, Isaiah? He's a forward.
Yeah,
the easiest way to say it.
Yeah, he's in the front.
Yes,
he's striker, a scorer.
Whatever. Yeah, so he's an attack, and he makes a move on the wing and dodges the long pole, the defenseman, and a middie came over, and I mean, it's just an illegal cross check. He just had his hands on his stick like this and just cross checked him right underneath the helmet in the jaw, just right in the jaw. So NBC, Bob actually made me do, this wasn't the best Bob move ever. I wasn't real thrilled with Bob in this, but the day before he made me stand and do like a height thing with NBC. And NBC is now 6 feet tall. So he's got me by about an inch and a half is about what we're looking at here. So I'm not exactly thrilled about all of this. And Bob had to point that out. So I'm very thankful. Then Bob says to me, he goes, how tall are your brothers? And I said, 6'5 and 6'1. And he goes, so hold on, you're the oldest and the runt? And he goes, that must have sucked. And I said, yeah, it did. But I'm okay. It's fine. It's all worked out fine, Bob. I appreciate your concern, which is a funny line. So anyway, so he's a big kid. He's, you know, 6 feet tall, 160 pounds or something like that. So for an eighth grader, he's a pretty decent sized kid. And he got KO'd. I mean, it's just a totally illegal cross check to the jaw. He goes down. He never stays down. But he stayed down and he's just writhing in pain, which I've never seen from him ever. So now you start to get a little worried. And I never run right out there. never run right out there. Always, you know, give it a minute, let the coaches kind of handle it, look for a thumbs up or thumbs down from a coach, and then I'll go out. And this was at 8:40 in the morning. Our first game is at 8 o'clock in the morning. So we're in the second half. And I go over, and then it's like, okay, we got problems. Like we may have broken jaw. We may have, concussion. We may have all of these things. Luckily we, incredible family friends, an oral surgeon, and gave him an on-site evaluation and an examination, and then opened up his practice, and we were able to get an x-ray, CT scan, all of this. The crazy thing about all of this, and anybody, I don't even know, in another sport, I suppose this would be like if you were in basketball, if you were going up for a layup and you got clotheslined, like that type of violent, like clotheslined and then just slammed into the ground type of thing is what this was. The referee right in front of the play, because they always have one on the attack and then one opposite midfield. The one in the attack was not 10 feet from NBC and didn't even see it, which is impossible because it's a shot, for crying out loud. It's a shot. So I don't know what he was watching. Luckily, the referee across the field did. So he assessed it was a 1 minute penalty for this thing, for this hit.
No two-minute non-releasable.
No, just 1 minute and releasable, and that was it. And it comes back to something that we got an email about this in youth sports. We have reached the point. Long story short, for NBC, he's going to be fine. Severe trauma to the jaw, soft foods for a week, painkillers, all of that stuff. So he's kind of floating right now. So, and then we'll just watch for the concussion stuff. And I've done all the concussion protocol training and stuff. So keep a close eye on that, and we'll see how it all goes. But theoretically, he's all going to be just fine. And I don't need a pound of flesh for the kid, but I do think we've reached the point in youth sports where the amount of sports that is being played by youth cannot properly or even possibly be officiated correctly by the people who are in charge of doing it. There just aren't enough people. There aren't enough people to officiate it. There aren't enough people who know what they're doing to officiate it. And it leads to stuff like this was building. It was building like this. The physicality just kept building. And Bake, you and I were talking about this when we were at the game last weekend. We were watching kids. Like, if you give kids an inch, they take a mile and a half on physicality. I see this in football. I see it in basketball. It's definitely a problem in lacrosse, for sure. I don't know what the inch and equals a mile and a half in baseball would be, because you don't have that physicality to it. That's probably more like the celebratory home run dances and all of that stuff that drive people absolutely nuts in youth baseball. But I do think we've reached a tipping point in youth sports where we don't have enough people. And I don't blame them, by the way. The way parents talk to officials, which is an entirely different topic, that's abhorrent, the way that some parents talk to officials. I hear it. I hear a lot of it. I don't say anything. Just go in the corner and say anything. Bake, you witness this. But people do. And so I don't blame them for not wanting to do it. But we are at a point where there aren't enough people who are willing and able to officiate, juxtaposed to the amount of activities that they're trying to be officiated. That's where I'm at with it, that there just aren't enough folks. And it manifested, unfortunately, for my oldest this weekend. And that's the way that it goes. But it could have been your kid, it could have been any kid that this happened to. It could have been anyone. And we're quite frankly lucky that it wasn't a broken jaw. Really, really fearful that it was, is what the initial diagnosis was, fearful that it would be. So he's going to be fine. But the reason we get to that point is the thing that I think is the fulcrum of all of this, is there's just too much damn activity, not enough quality people who know what they're doing to officiate it. And the ones who are great are on a little bit of an island and really don't want to come back because sometimes the way that parents talk to them. So I do think we're at a tip, and I'm in it. And I know a lot of you out there listening are in this world, and whether it's lacrosse, soccer, I've heard, is a brutal one. My kids don't play soccer. I've heard that's a brutal one with officiating, with some of the physicality that happens there. And again, I'm not throwing this on the officials. I'm not. I don't think that there's enough of them. And I think that it's a thankless job, and we need to pay them a lot more so better people continue to do it, is kind of my thesis on this thing, so that these folks have a real understanding of what's done. And then it also falls on coaching, right? If you coach that stuff, then that's the type of stuff that you're going to get. So there's just so many kids playing it, and there's a ton of issues with it all over the sport, no matter what sport your kid plays.
The coaching is part of it, right? Because yeah. I said something to you yesterday when we were texting about all of this, that if coaches are going to let players play that way, then coaches need to be held accountable.
Yes.
And listen, I'm all for playing hard and tough in sports. I'm also not for playing dirty in sports. And if you're a coach and you allow that to happen, and I feel like it used to be a coach would pull a kid off the field. And he could do that, and he could say, you're not playing the rest of the game, or this or that. Well, now you have parents revolt against the coach. You mentioned, I wouldn't want to coach youth sports. I wouldn't want to officiate youth sports. I don't want anything to do with them, because the parents' behavior is ridiculous. No. And it's so funny, Bo. Scotty and I were talking yesterday about this 2014 playoff, and he is all for it. Scotty Vegas is all for a 2014 playoff.
Just to bet it?
Just to have more college football. He loves college football. He watches San Jose State versus Fresno State on a Tuesday, and he wants all of that.
He watches it.
So, but my point with all of this, and you, I know when is the point where it's enough, and you're like, well, it's never going to be enough. We always say that everything in society has gotten to the point it was. We've eroded things little by little, where it's like, oh, that's not a big deal. Well, that's okay. What is that? That's no big deal. But you keep letting all of these little things happen, and then you turn around and you're like, what the hell happened to the sport I love? Mm-hmm. Or what the hell happened to the world I lived in? Well, you remember all those little things you said were okay? Well, they all added up, and now you have this.
Yep. I think that's fair.
And you can feel it build, too. And Bo talked about that during the game. You can always tell when a game is getting out of hand. Mm-hmm. You say, try to keep it under control. Try to keep it under control. And the best thing the refs can do is try to call more penalties throughout the game, to try not let it get out of hand, try to discourage it. And then for the coaches, and this is something that my brother and I coach high school lacrosse, that we've gotten better at throughout the years, but it's just managing your own players' emotions. You always have some players that are more emotional than others. Mm-hmm. And during the game, those emotions can get the best of them. And especially when it starts to get more physical, knowing when you just need to pull them out for a second and just say, you just need to take a break for 30 seconds. You need to take a run off and let somebody else go, and then just cool yourself down and go back out there. But that's the hard part. It's so emotional. And I think for the referees, for the fans, for the parents, for the coaches, youth sports to high school sports to college sports, there's so much emotion in it, and it's hard to control when you're in the moment. Everybody acts differently than they would the following day. And that's the hard part.
Yeah, I think my thing would be like the two quick elixirs. We're never going to stop the growth, because it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. All of these sports are youth sports, just such a massive industry now. So much money to be made that no one's ever putting that genie back in the bottle. But if there is coaching accountability to what Bake said, you're done. That's it. You're done. And that has to be a non-negotiable. You're done. And then if there's, from a refereeing standpoint, and I am so thankful for it, I always go up to a referee afterwards. Thank you. No matter if I think that they did a good job or not, thank you for doing it. Thank you, because it's thankless to do that job. The one thing I would say, and I say this to basketball, everything, call it ultra tight early. Call every game ultra tight early, and then the kids will conform to you. If you give a little bit here or there, to Bake's point, all those little hits end up being something crazy by the end of the game. So call it tight as possible early, and then you can loosen the reins as the game goes along. But the kids conform; they will conform to you. We had a pretty fun little sports Sunday. I don't know that either of the things had much for drama. The PGA Championship kind of ended up being a runaway by the time all was said and done. Same thing with the Cavs last night. We'll get into all of that. The Big Ten meetings—they've invited folks. You won't believe where they're hosting it. We'll get that coming up at 10 o'clock. We're off and running on a Monday, Bishop and Friends, right here on the Fan.
We're the girthiest radio station in the history of radio. Uncomfortably girthy. This promo is uncomfortable. The Fan, Ohio's girth destination.
Hey friends, Beamer.
Atlas Beller has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Favorite fan shows are on YouTube. Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bo sitting in his closet, Timmy Hall's Gaudy gold chains, and Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine today, and it will be breezy, humid, and warm with highs again into the upper 80s to low 90s in some spots. For tonight, mostly cloudy overnight with our lows down into the 70s, and we'll still see those breezy winds, which will persist into your Tuesday. Mostly sunny to start and breezy with chances of showers and storms developing in the afternoon and evening. Highs will be in the upper 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
During this 10-second promo, Rothman will lose money gambling on something.
People like you come here and blow the family nest egg that built this town.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan. We'll read your emails on the air. But we won't tell you where to send them. Hey, we're not doing all the work for you. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, pop quiz. Had either one of you heard of Aaron Rye before yesterday?
I had, because I feel like doing updates. He's been in some tournaments before where he was near the leaderboard or you had to announce his name, so I had to look it up and know that it was pronounced Rye.
I could have met this guy at my local gym yesterday, and he could have introduced himself to me, and I would have no idea who he is.
He'd be walking down a high street with a shirt that says, I'm Aaron Rye, and you still wouldn't know who he is?
Wouldn't have known.
Well, we know now. We know now, because he shot 65 in the final round of the PGA Championship to win by 3 shots over John Rahm. The leaderboard was littered with some big-time names, with Rahm just a couple of shots back. Justin Thomas threw a 65 on the board. Ludvig Åberg was in the mix. Rory was in the mix until finally towards the end. Schauffele was in there. There was a ton of star power on this leaderboard in an event that, and we'll get to this in just a second, an event that I think needs to do a little bit of amending to the way it goes about its business, because it does feel like it's getting lost or has gotten lost in a big, big way. But Aaron Rye is the story here. He is the first English-born player to win this event in 109 years.
That's crazy.
Craziness. Craziness. And the story behind him is crazy, too. I love this because, I mean, he's wearing the two gloves, which you get, you know, a lot of times you get made fun of if you're doing that. There's this great story about how his dad, they grew up in a working class family in England. He got a set of pings when he was like 12 years old that were ultra expensive. And his dad would take pins and baby oil and clean them after every round. And so if you watched his bag, you'd notice that he had iron covers on every iron, which that was what that was in homage to. And then he wore the two gloves because when he was a kid, it was cold. And in order to hit balls, he had to wear two gloves. And so he continues to wear the two gloves. He hit it straight. This, a 70-foot putt to kind of ace the thing is the one that I think everyone's going to remember. He ended up running away from it, as I mentioned. He spoke yesterday post-round about being the first English player to win this thing in over a century.
Wasn't actually aware of it until yesterday. I think in this room yesterday it was mentioned, which was the first in my knowledge. But yeah, extremely, extremely proud. There's a lot of incredible and historic English players over those 100 years who have gone on to achieve incredible things and had phenomenal careers. But to win this event and to be a person that's the first one to have won it in such a long time from England is an amazing thing and something to be extremely proud of.
All of these massive names who have won majors are trying to chase him down. He put it on ice with the putt on 17. Here he is on that.
I think firstly the golf course really demands it. It was a true major championship setup in terms of how difficult it was, how penalizing it was, but it also rewarded you for good play. So I think the nature of the course and the nature of the shots that are required over the last few holes just require a lot of attention and a lot of focus. And yeah, that putt on 17 was incredible. Was just trying to focus on speed and get it close. It started to look really good line-wise with probably about 15 feet to go. Slowed up really nicely as well, so it just kind of conspired all together for that ball to go in the hole. But an incredible putt and a real bonus to see that one go in.
How much of this did you guys watch over the weekend?
I was actually locked in to quite a bit of it. Yesterday, I think yesterday I was locked into the Reds and Guardians until close to the end, and that one was out of hand. And then I went over to the PGA, and I watched a lot of it. Now I was doing other things at the house, you know, had things going on. But it was on the TV for quite a bit yesterday.
I watched a bit of it on Saturday, but yesterday was Gardos and Reds, and then prepping for the Cavs game. I did not catch this on my Sunday afternoon yesterday, but I watched a good portion of it on Saturday.
Yeah, I watched, you know, quite a bit of it in the afternoon. Yesterday was so nice, and we finally had like a great day, so we were outside quite a bit yesterday. So I kind of was paying attention to it as it was going on. Had father-in-law's 75th birthday party, so it was kind of on there. So we watched as it kind of came to conclusion. Watched more of it actually with you Saturday, Isaiah, just because the weather wasn't quite as great. We had some rain in the afternoon and stuff, so that was a little bit different. To me, guys, it felt like a U.S. Open. It just felt like a U.S. Open. It had the look of a U.S. Open. The course had a setup like the U.S. Open. The scoring, for the most part, now they were able to, you know, take some from it over the weekend, but the scoring was relatively reminiscent of a U.S. Open. There were some 65s out there, but it's a par 70 course. So, you know, that's not absurd to do that. That's rare in a U.S. Open, I suppose. So maybe the scoring was a little bit better, but it looked like a U.S. Open. It felt like a U.S. Open. It takes place in a time of year that to me, it gets lost. I know that they wanted to get the PGA, you know, the chase for the FedEx Cup. They wanted to get that away from the NFL, and that's why they moved the PGA Championship into May. But the more and more that they've been doing this, and they've been doing this for a couple of years now, this ain't it. This is not it. This is it gets lost. It is a fail. It's a fail for the sport. There was absolutely no buzz around this thing at all. And if you think about, what is Jim Nance's line used to be on the PGA Championship, Glory's Last Chance or something like that? Is that what he called it? It had at least that part of the identity to it.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that the PGA really is screwing up here is playing what I consider kind of U.S. Open courses. I mean, this is a U.S. Open type course. They're going to play Shinnecock. They're going to play the Olympic Club in San Francisco. Those are U.S. Open courses. They have a feel of a U.S. Open. And right now, the PGA Championship just has no damn identity at all. And I think this thing really gets lost. I didn't hear people talking about it. And if you're at U Sports, you know that you always have like an hour between games to kind of just shoot the breeze. There wasn't anybody talking about this of people who normally would.
And it's kind of crazy because of the leaderboard that was there heading into the final day. You had Rahm in the mix. You had Rory in the mix. You had Xander in the mix. Scotty was lurking. He wasn't right there, but he was lurking. Justin Thomas had a great day yesterday. He shot a 65, too, to kind of get himself in the mix. You kind of thought as the day was going on, maybe Justin Thomas was in the best spot because he was in the clubhouse, posted the number and waiting, but then Rye did what he did. Bo, the one thing, and I mentioned I watched a lot of this weekend, that crowd, to me, was atrocious. What are we yelling for? And I know this has always been a thing of golf, but it seemed really bad this weekend. What are we yelling for as soon as a guy hits a shot? You have no clue if that shot's good or not. You have no clue where that shot's getting. And the things these guys were yelling were just complete nonsense. It didn't make any sense. It was nothing. Like, what are we doing? It almost made me turn the TV off.
Well, it manifested with Rory on the five yesterday, where if he makes eagle, he could have got it to within a shot of the lead. He bombed at 340 down there. Then his second shot's in the rough, and in his backswing, somebody yells, go, you know, USA, USA, or something like that in the backswing. Then he has the guy escorted out. Then his second shot is in two, and somebody yells in that backswing, and then he has that guy escorted out. So it's like, how did we get to this point where we have no decorum or no way how to behave?
And it was a Rory drive. It might have been on that par five, even, where you're talking about, where he hits the drive, and everybody's screaming and going nuts, and the drive's awful. It's in the middle of the rough in the left.
Yeah.
He overcooked it on the draw.
Okay, maybe a different one then.
So it might have been a different hole. Right. Yeah, but it was just brutal.
Yeah. We right now are in a situation where we feel like we can say anything, anywhere, anytime, any place without consequence.
And it's that little erosion we talked about, right? Like, you're like, you're no fun. You're an old fuddy-duddy. Well, now we're here.
Just behave yourself.
And it's across all sports, too. Like, we saw it last night with Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs against the Pistons. Like, the fans getting into it with some of the Cavs players. And that's just across all sports right now. Fans feel like they can say anything they want. And golf is, like, the last place you should feel that you can do that.
There's a great Ron White bit where, and I'll butcher it, but just look it up because it's great. But he's gets arrested from being drunk in public. And he says, he goes, I was drunk in a bar, You drug me out into the public.
You threw me into public.
Threw me into public. That's what it was. That's the line. You threw me into public. Yeah. We in this country have a real problem with drunk in public. A real problem. We cannot handle our alcohol. And we consume it publicly all day. And then you get liquid courage. You think you can say anything you want without consequences. And I think it leads to it. So yeah, there's a lot of layers to that. When you mentioned, the Cavaliers, there was no drama here, kids, at all. That was a beatdown in the biggest way possible. They're on to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since LeBron James was a member of the franchise. We will get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends, right here on the...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a Monday edition of the program. That was sure easy. That was kind of over at half for the Cavaliers. They went up to Detroit, hadn't won a road playoff game this entire run, had not been to an Eastern Conference Final without LeBron James since 1992. That's how long that it has been. It has been since 18 since they've been there at all. Donovan Mitchell has never seen a conference final in his career. He's been to 9 straight playoffs. Every time he's been in the league, he's made the postseason, but has not gotten to an Eastern Conference Final or before that in Utah, a Western Conference Final, and now he has. 125-94. Mitchell was sensational in this one. I'll be honest with you guys. My kids were like all jacked up to watch this. They're all into it. My wife's a native Clevelander, so she's all into it, as locked in as can be. I was kind of excited to see like a competitive basketball game, obviously hoping the Cavs could win. It was never that. It was never that. I was shocked at Detroit's lack of pushback in this game. Stan Van Gundy talked about it a lot on the broadcast, just about how they just didn't seem like they were engaged in any way, shape, or form. The fact that this thing was, 64-47 at the break, and it was consistently over 20 points for much of the second half. I did not have that coming at all. That was a performance I'm not sure anybody saw coming.
Yeah, I don't think so. And you thought that it would be a game 7, the 1 seed versus the 4 seed. You thought it would be a competitive basketball game, and it just wasn't. And I'm guessing, and Isaiah is one of those, if you're a Cavs fan, you were okay with that because you had a pretty easy night. You could exhale pretty early on. I think for the Cavs and like Kenny Atkinson too, I think it would have been easy for them to play this game tight, especially going up against your old coach. And it's like, we got rid of this guy because we couldn't get to this point. We brought this guy in because we thought he could get us there. And then if that guy would have got there before you, that would have been really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And the Cavs were great. Donovan Mitchell was good. Evan Mobley was strong. And Jared Allen, and I know I've said this before, I don't watch a ton of NBA basketball. And I had the whole thing on last night, Bo. Until it was like 5 minutes left, and I was like, all right, I'm going to bed. I can turn this off. It was on the whole night last night, which that hasn't happened in my house in a long, long time with the NBA. Yeah. I don't understand the Jared Allen vitriol. I don't get it. He was big in the first game 7. He was big in this game 7. He gets double-doubles all the time. I know Cavs fans say he doesn't always play like that. He's soft. I think the guy's a great basketball player.
And he's turned the corner. I feel like a lot of the hate that Jarrett's gotten over the years all stems back from the first series, probably 4 years ago, against the Knicks. That's 90% of the hate that he gets carries over from then because he was labeled as soft. But I will tell you, after watching this series and this playoff run so far, Jarrett has played so tough. I mean, there was points in the series where JB was complaining. Shocker. JB was complaining about the Cavs being physical, which is completely opposite narrative of where they've been. But I feel like the story last night was Donovan Mitchell. I mean, he controlled the game throughout. If you just looked at the stat sheet, you would say 26 points, solid game from Donovan. But he made it look so effortless last night. And the last time that we talked, Bo, which was after the first 2 games, I was thinking, is Donovan hurt? Like he looked.
Oh, we talked about that.
The first 2 games, he looked like he could not get to the rim. And then since then, games 3 and 4 and so on, He has looked like a completely different player. Last night, he was by far the best player on the court, and Cade Cunningham has been tremendous throughout this series, but last night, Donovan controlled from the start to the finish, and there was never a contest for the Cavs.
I think this validates everything that Dan Gilbert has done, you know, with acquisition. This is the most expensive team in the NBA. I don't know how many people realize that, but it's the most expensive team in the NBA. He's willing to take it all on. Hell, yesterday he rented out 25 buses. 25 buses to bus folks from Cleveland up to Detroit for the game.
Paid for their tickets, too. Not just bus ride.
Think about that. Tickets and buses? I mean, how many people fit on a bus? Is it 60 people a bus? Does that seem fair? Probably 60 people on a bus? I mean, I went to state school, 60 times 25. That's a lot of folks. And now he's got it. I mean, he's worth billions. But to have the thought to do that, to bring your fans up there and to provide them a way up there and get them all involved in it, this validates all of it. I can't imagine how much Dan wanted this to get to a conference final without LeBron. There is always going to be a little bit of stuff between the two of them and to get there. And by the way, this is the first time since Price Darty that they've gotten there without LeBron. That's 1992. That group only made one Eastern Conference final. Just one. I mean, they're revered up there as if that they played for championships. They didn't. They got to one conference finals in 1992. And at that point, there was no chance they were beating those Bulls teams. The Bulls teams were fully formed at that point. But I think this validates all of it. And Kenny Atkinson spoke post game about Gilbert ownership and the Cavs fans and all that this one represents.
That was so cool. I mean, I think I heard 25 buses we had came to the game. And I've never seen that in the NBA where a visiting team, you know, brings that many people and they're present. Like, we heard them. Now, we were making shots, and obviously, you know, the Detroit fans were you know, not jumping, but our people were. I just can't believe how good the seats were that they gave. Like, you know, usually when you bring buses, you know, they're like, they put you in, like, we had good seats. That was so cool behind the bench. I think the players and the coaches appreciated it so much.
How do you think that went down? Like, you think Dan has his assistant go gobble up all the seats on StubHub and SeatGeek and Ticketmaster, go scoop them all up and just start assigning them to season ticket holders? How do you think you go about logistically doing that?
Well, I mean, a lot of his business dealings are in Detroit, so he's probably got the inside hookup, I'm sure. And as an owner,
Bake, he basically owns downtown Detroit.
Yeah.
Anytime a building comes up for sale, he buys it.
So they probably just did that, right? They just sent out a blast email to their season ticket holders saying, if you want this, sign up quick. And probably people did that. This here from The Athletic, 1,400 Clevelanders Dan Gilbert paid for and shipped up to Detroit last night.
And you think about, too, in like the third quarter, about halfway through, when it was becoming evident that the Pistons were not coming back, the Cavs held them at bay the entire second half by 20 points, you started to hear the Let's Go Cavs chant in Detroit, which when I heard that through the TV, I was like, oh, man, this is a bad night to be a Pistons fan. If you're in that arena right now still, a lot of them had cleared out, and you're hearing Let's Go Cavs chants at home in Game 7. Like, that's one that they're gonna think about for a while, unfortunately.
You go back to Game 7 of the first round series, and, well, heck, let's just take it more recently. You're down 2-0 coming home. Game 3 in Cleveland, and if you lose that game and you go down 3-0, obviously you lose the series. You're not coming back from 3-0. They won that game, but if they lost that game and gone down 3-0, that leads to a summer of, well, we probably need to trade Donovan Mitchell. We're not going to re-sign James Harden. Do you shop Evan Mobley? All of it. Like, everything that you had built would have come crashing down if they had gone down 3-0. They didn't. They didn't go down 3-0. They battled back. They won the series in 7. I thought they were cooked after they won Game 6 in Cleveland. No chance of going up to Detroit and winning. They did. And now it validates all of it. It validates Mitchell. It validates keeping the front office together. It validates the Atkinson switch and the fact that you beat JB in this game. It validates everything you've been doing. And now you get what we all wanted. For those of us that are like casuals or jumping on a bandwagon, now you get a game every other night. You get the world's most famous arena tomorrow night which is going to be bonkers, absolutely bonkers. It'll be bonkers up there for games 4, 3, and 4, because that crowd is as fired up as any you're going to find. This is what we want in sports. You want your teams playing massive games, high leverage, big time environments, and there's going to be a bandwagon here that's going to get jumped on. And this is the thing I was always curious about, because the Cavaliers, when LeBron was there, Columbus was Cavstown 2.0. You couldn't go to a sports bar in this town, a restaurant in this town that had TVs when LeBron was there in the postseason that it wasn't on. Watch parties everywhere, all of that stuff. This will be putting this to the test, because now you're in Eastern Conference Final. Will Central Ohio jump on the bandwagon of this? My hunch is they will. The ratings one way or another will prove it, but my hunch is they will, guys.
I think they're going to. You can kind of feel it down here already. Like, I think last night people were into it, and I think just the way they performed last night, and then the Knicks again to get them back, I do think people are ready to jump on.
And the narrative around this series will be that at this point it's the Knicks to lose. Like, coming into game one, they're 7.5-point favorites in Madison Square Garden, and even the Pistons series, the Pistons were the one seed, but the Cavs were the veteran playoff team, to where when we came into that series, it was, oh, the Cavs should beat the Pistons. That's how me as a Cavs fan, that's how I felt coming into this series. There will not be a national pundit that picks the Cavs. I'm looking at the odds right now, and the Cavs are the farthest odds to win the finals. They're plus 2,000. The Knicks are plus 550 in third. So that's how much of an underdog you are.
Which, and that'll make it more fun. That's not justified, though, I don't think. You watch a lot more than me. I think they can absolutely beat the Knicks.
100%.
Yeah.
That's shocking to me that the odds are that far apart, because coming into this series, yet again, the Knicks will be the favorite for everyone across the country, but there's no reason why not the Cavs, especially the way they played last night. Sam Merrill looked incredible, shooting the lights out. It was a fantastic game. If they play even close to the way they played last night, they can absolutely hang with the Knicks.
All right, coming up next, the Steelers have themselves a quarterback. It's a name that you know, and a big weekend in the diamond for the Scarlet and Gray. We'll get to all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The sound of Paul Keels calling a Buckeye game is erotic.
Oh, yes.
Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Performance.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Have you ever met a man who wins money betting on tennis? Enter Scotty Vegas. Join Scotty and Dave Biddle for On the Money.
Presented by Ohio for Responsible Gambling.
Sunday mornings at 9 on The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Connect with the show on X at 971BFS. Jump in our YouTube chat or just send a raven. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
I guess in a way this is what I mean when I meant when you're talking about the PGA Championship and talk about how there was just so much going on this weekend. Nothing like a behemoth like the NFL, or nothing like a behemoth like a massive college football game or something like that. But there was all of this playoff stuff on the ice, on the hardwood, all of that. You had the Preakness Stakes this weekend. You had the baseball. You had all of it. You had a signing in the NFL. You had the Buckeye baseball team with a sweep up in Ann Arbor, which was really cool. You also had the news from the crew. They fired head coach Henrik Rydstrom on Sunday, joined the crew this winter, departs just after 14 games, just 13 points, just 3 wins in that time. General manager Isatal with this to the Athletic. You have to look at it from three sides. One is obviously results. We have 3 wins in 14 games. Two is the way we want to play. It's been better now than earlier in the season, but still not there. An example in last night. Lastly, culturally, it did not click. We believe a change was much needed. Credit to them for just shutting it down now and being done with it. Assistant coach Laurent Courtois will take over as interim coach one more league match before the 6-week break for the World Cup. So the timing is nice. Reminds me a little bit of what the Blue Jackets did, huh, Beck?
Yeah, I think that's the significant thing here. If you thought you needed to make a change, and it sure seems like whatever Rydstrom was peddling when he came in here, the team wasn't buying. And it just seemed like a whole overhaul of the way the team was made to play and had played in the past. So if you're going to make a change, this is the time, because you're going to have that World Cup break where you can kind of work on things and get some things in place.
And you only got 14 games. Like, and that's good for the crew for being able to admit, yeah, this just didn't work. Like, the culture fit, it's something just didn't work in the locker room. Like you said, the communication, the style, whatever the match was, didn't work. And they were okay with just cutting ties and trying something new. It's better to do that early than do it too late.
Yeah, for sure. The thing I think most people would say, and I this ain't the old school where I'm hosting Crew Extra and I'm talking about this every week. Like, I'm not following it the way that I used to do. So I don't know. But obviously, Wilfried Nancy was here, had great success, went to Celtic, did not last long there. As far as I know, he's still available. I would imagine there are people who would want him back. Although I did see the comments from Tall saying, like, look, we're going to give Courtois a shot. He deserves it. So that's how that'll play out, and then be interesting to see beyond that.
It seemed like this morning Brother Bone threw some water on that.
Oh, he's
like, that's not that's something well, that's going know. To happen.
Okay. He would know. He would be plugged in on that. That's not a world that I'm as plugged into as I used to be, certainly. The baseball, you had the battle for Ohio took place, and you had the Gardos winning that one 2-1.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
What happened to your Redlegs, buddy? I was told the first 2 weeks of the season I got to pay attention to Reds baseball.
I think, Bo, that injuries have happened to this pitching staff. And it's just brutal. Like, the starters were good at the beginning of the year, and you didn't even have Lodolo or Hunter Green, and you still haven't had Hunter Green pitch, but Brandon Williamson, shoulder, ouchie. Rhett Lauder, shoulder, ouchie. Brady Singer took a, and he pitched yesterday, and he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't the Brady Singer that you had seen in the past. Took a ball off his foot, and the bullpen, you lose your closer with a hamstring injury, and they're getting taxed more because the starters aren't pitching as long, and it's just not, the pitching staff has not been as good. The bats took a little dip there for a while. They're come back a little bit. They didn't have a terrible series against the Guardians, but the pitching was not good.
And yesterday, the Gardos were just hot. I mean, the bats were hot yesterday. Manzardo finally gets going a little bit, gets two homers out of there. Jose hits one. Bazana had three hits coming up from the Clippers. It's just all the bats were hitting yesterday. DeLotter had a home run. Unfortunately, the Reds just landed on the other side of all the hitting.
Was it Rick Manning who went at Manzardo for not having his sunglasses down?
Yes.
That was funny.
Sitting on his hat, losing the fly ball. Classic.
I did like that. I thought that was pretty funny. This was pretty funny as well. Ohio State baseball team went up to Ann Arbor, beat Michigan in Ann Arbor in a sweep for the first time since 1994. Ohio State will be the sixth seed in the Big Ten tournament. They'll square off with 11-seeded Washington. I said this when I first moved up here after covering Southern college baseball for six seasons. Man, it's awesome when it's done right. Now, I don't know if it can ever be done right up here. Just climate, it's so hard. But I would say at a lot of those Southern schools, with the exception of football, obviously, in some places, men's basketball, women's basketball, the South Carolinas, LSUs, those type of places, Tennessee, obviously, for women's basketball. With the possible exception of that, college baseball in those places is the biggest thing going. And it's, in a lot of instances, it's bigger than basketball. Like, when I was in Tallahassee, the Florida State baseball team was a much bigger deal than the Florida State basketball team. Much bigger deal in terms of what people were talking about, what people paid attention to. I don't know if we'll ever get to that point here. I don't know if it'll ever put that back. I mean, it's been forever since a Northern team has contended at the very, very apex of the sport. And I think climate's a big part of it. But that's an awesome win. That's a great series win. And if they were able to make a little run in Omaha, get a little bit of momentum, people would jump on that bandwagon too big.
Bo, this is a Buckeye baseball team that finished 16th out of 17 teams in the Big Ten last year, because Wisconsin does not have a baseball team.
Yeah.
They don't have a baseball program. So they were next to last.
Yeah.
Did not qualify for the Big Ten tournament this last year, and I don't think they have for a couple of years. They are the sixth seed now in this, sweeping Michigan. They're hot heading into this thing. The only issue I have here is, and I understand the Big Ten tournament is out in Omaha, so there's a little bit of a time difference. The Buckeyes start tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. Now, you can hear it right
Fan. Hold, please. Hold, please. Did you say 10 p.m.?
10 p.m. 9 p.m. start in Omaha. That's bad. I don't know.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a 2 a.m. body clock finish.
It's rough. Now, I'm guessing you're not quite 2 a.m. unless you're going
3.5, right?
You're getting pretty close.
You're getting close.
I've done some of the baseball games over there producing those, and they touch on 4 hours more than you'd think.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking, that's craziness.
Yeah.
Find another field. I'm sure they're playing at the College World Series place. I wonder if Rosenblatt's still around. They could still play there. Just compete against yourself. I mean, you can't, 10 o'clock Eastern? Come on. That's absurd. But of course, you can listen to it. You go to sleep. Is it Tyler on that?
Yeah, Tyler Danberg on the call right here on the Fan.
Well, he's got a very soothing voice. So you can put that on as you're going to bed on your, that's Tuesday night. That's the way, and then you can watch it, of course, on the Big Ten Network as well. All right, speaking of the Big Ten, the Big Ten is doing what we said it ought to do. Will it work? We'll explain coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on the Fan.
1, 2, 3. Here in the Fan is always football o'clock. Proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. The Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's Tebow.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. What a night for the Cleveland Cavaliers. For the first time since 2018, heading back to the Eastern Conference Finals. They hammered the Pistons last night, 125-94 in Game 7. Donovan Mitchell was in control the whole way. He led the way with 26. Jared Allen had 23. Evan Mobley, 21-12 in the win. Aaron Rye shot 5 under par 65 in the final round of the PGA Championship yesterday. He finished 9 under for the tournament and won by 3 strokes. It's his first major championship win. Rye becomes the first Englishman to win the tournament in 109 years. The Guardians hit 6 home runs yesterday. They take round 1 of the Ohio Cup, beating the Reds 10-3. The Columbus Crew has fired head coach Henrik Rydstrom and named assistant Laurent Courtois the interim head coach. This one's sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union, voted best credit union for the past 8 years in a row by CBUS Top Picks.
Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who? Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour on a Monday. Austin Ward coming up in 28 minutes from now. This is the headline on ESPN at Big Ten Spring Meetings Coaches Lobby for 24-team playoff. We have long lamented that the Big Ten spring meetings ought to be attended by, you know, the media. Last few years, they weren't. They've been on the West Coast for a while. The Big Ten, more than any other operation in college athletics, views itself as NFL light. That's really the way that the Big Ten views itself. It's all going to make sense in a second. The television package is what? It's spread across 3 networks. What is that reminiscent of? The National Football League, right? So you're spread out over multiple networks. You're trying to get gold coins into a pot from all sorts of different places to accumulate the most, and they've done all of that. They've been pretty ruthless with a lot of this stuff, similar to the NFL, in regard to what they're expecting of their teams. See Big Noon for Ohio State, every big game on campus only forever until this contract is finally done. Their answer to most things is that's what the money's for. Well, this kind of checks that box too. So The Big Ten meetings are taking place in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. There's one resort in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. It's called Terranea. I've been there. My guess is if you were to Google that right now and see what the average price for a room tonight is, I would be shocked if it was under $500. I'd be shocked. My hunch is even with some sort of, you know, surge pricing, that it's around there. At peak times of the year, it's like $1,200 a night, $1,400 bucks a night is the way that this place is. So the Big Ten says, okay, we're going to invite the media to cover our league. And then they send that league to Los Angeles. And they send that resort to one of the richest ones that you could go to in California. And that's saying something, because there's some ritzy ones in California. But that's exactly what's happened. So, yeah, you're invited. Good luck affording it. You're not going to take a car. You're going to have to fly. So the majority of the people who cover this league, my guess is, won't be there. Conversely, the SEC is going to have it in Destin. And guess where you can drive to for every single SEC school if you want to? Destin. Getch, which is relatively affordable if you want it to be. Destin. That's the difference. Now, they may win on all of this stuff, but you're not going to get a full media throng at this thing. And it's funny because there's actually a quote in this story that Pete Thamel wrote from Jed Fish, and it speaks to exactly what we talked about forever, Bake. I just felt like if messages were getting out of one part of the country and not the other part of the country, some of the things that we wanted to share that we really believe in was getting missed. And so he's advocated for this. I'm not sure he advocated for a five-star resort in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. Well, he probably did. It's a relatively short flight for him compared to other folks, so it's still a long ways. But that's what they're going to get. So they sort of do it, but not all the way that they need to get everybody there that needs to be there.
Some pretty prime real estate out there in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. The Big Ten is a conference that is all about making money, but yet they are wasting so much money with this. Like, that, you say what you want about getting the, you know, you want to get every region of your, and I know this is close to LA. This isn't where USC or UCLA are, though. This is a whole different world.
Yeah. it's similar to, like, I mean, from a topography. I mean, yeah, it's on the coast. I mean, it's on the coast. It's Los Angeles adjacent, but it's literally on the coast, you know, straight west of Los Angeles. Yeah.
This is part of what we're talking about when we say you're slowly eroding away at what people love about this game. And one of the things that people love about college football, as you have talked about forever, Bo, is the regionality. There is nothing about Rancho Palos Verdes that screams Big Ten.
No, there's not.
And I know it's not glorious. Like, you want to scream Big Ten, have these meetings at Lambeau Field.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, what are we? Chicago screams Big Ten. Indianapolis screams Big Ten. And I understand you're throwing a bone to your teams on the West Coast saying, hey, you won't have to travel as far. And you're also saying, hey, we're trying to get a different audience. But this isn't a Big Ten audience you're reaching right now.
No. I'm going to give you, here are Midwest resort places that if you just wait a couple of weeks, you could have this and the majority of your constituency could get to it easily. The resort at French Lick. Several great golf courses, nice resort, southern Indiana. A lot of your constituents, you could drive to that. Kohler, you could go Wisconsin. And you, because they want the golf, because Terranea has got the golf too. So the coaches want to play golf. My guess is your tee times are relatively similar at like Whistling Straits and French Lick as they would be in Rancho Palos Verdes. All of them are expensive. You could do Traverse City if you wanted to go up into Michigan. That's a bit of a haul, obviously, but you could do that. Nemacolin in southwestern Pennsylvania. There's a ton of them that you could have these at, and you would have it be relatively centrally located and still get kind of that resort feel that the Southeastern Conference coaches get at Destin. You could have that exact same thing. It's not exactly the same because this conference is so much bigger, but at least it's in the vicinity. This ain't it. Like, no, I can't imagine. We'll ask Austin in 21 minutes if anybody on the beat is going to this thing. I mean, Ryan Day's going to talk. They'll put it all up. I don't think any of the beat is going for it. And it is one more example, though. By the way, the Big Ten may win in all of this. I mean, you've got currently the national champion in football, men's and women's basketball. They're all in your league. It's very difficult to sit here and be critical of any of the decisions they made, even if they annoy me, because it's working. The Big Ten has never had more power than it does right now. It's never had more success than it does right now. Last three national champions in football. When is it? Three different schools. I mean, a basketball national championship. That you got to go back to Mateen Cleaves to find the last time the Big Ten won a basketball championship before Michigan did it. We don't like talking about it around here, but it's fact.
Maryland, Juan Dixon, come on,
they
Bo.
They were in the ACC, coach.
Come on,
ACC.
Bo.
I'm not letting them do that. That one killed me when they did the Legends and Leaders, and they were talking about like the Tommy Frazier quarterback of the year. Stop it. You don't get their history. You get Nebraska, you get Maryland, you get them once they join your league. You don't get their history and get to trumpet it as your history.
And doesn't it feel like for this too, like the Big Ten obviously has always been seen as the Midwest, but them doing this, I feel like it's where they want to be seen as. Like when we had Oregon, USC, Washington, like obviously you add in some West Coast there, and then you bring the meetings, the minds together, and whenever this happens, everybody imagines, oh yeah, get the football guys in the room. Where really, in reality, the only people that matter in any of these meetings are the money people. They're the ones making all the decisions.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the marching orders that's become abundantly clear coming out of this is come hell or high water, we're going to have a 24-team playoff, and the Big Ten is going to push it and push it and push it. And you will hear it this week. You'll hear it from coaches. You're going to hear from Coach Day. You're going to hear from everybody who coaches in the Big Ten that they want a 24-team playoff. They want it for several reasons. We've talked about some of them, but it's going to be a reality, and how it's managed is going to be absolutely critical. On record, not a fan of it in any way, shape, or form, but we're going to have to get used to it because it is absolutely coming. The crazy thing about it is I don't know anybody who wants it other than the administrators and everybody who's looking for the found money. We will get into kind of the way they're going to pitch this coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The only workplace in America to participate in the Doorknob Fart Game. And we also play office basketball and sometimes do radio. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Family owned and operated.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Rothman and Ice are broadcasting live from the Memorial Pro-Am, and they'll be talking to very famous athletes and actors. And did you know that it's sponsored by the Waterworks and Ohio for Responsible Gambling? It is. Catch it all Wednesday, June 3rd at noon. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine today, and it will be breezy, humid, and warm with highs again into the upper 80s to low 90s in some spots. For tonight, mostly cloudy overnight with our lows down into the 70s, and we'll still see those breezy winds, which will persist into your Tuesday. Mostly sunny to start and breezy with chances of showers and storms developing in the afternoon and evening. Highs will be in the upper 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
All the Ohio State conversation you can handle. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Your Ohio State flagship station. The Fan. 10 feet tall and bulletproof isn't just a saying, it's a way of life. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and we are proudly brought to you by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 8 decades. Sawmill, Easton, they'll take care of you. I assure you of that. This is from Pete Thamel's piece out in Rancho Palos Verdes, California, where the Big Ten is meeting. Coming off three consecutive national titles in football, the Big Ten's voice will be heard louder this offseason. The league formally invited reporters to the spring meetings, a departure from the recent past and a move that mimics the heavily covered SEC meetings that take place annually in Florida after Memorial Day. Well, two other factors that are fail here is, number one, these are going to take place on West Coast time, Pacific time, so you're going to be 3 hours behind the East Coast where much of the news is generated. So there's another thing that they kind of short circuit on this thing, but I suppose they can say they're trying. Several of their coaches have their marching orders as well, including our guy. But let's start with this from PJ Fleck, who's quoted in the Pete Thamel piece about the 2014 playoff. Quote, it got tremendous steam and power behind it, especially from the 18 head coaches in the Big Ten. When you do a lot of things that everybody's 18 for 18 for what we should do, I think it speaks volume. So every coach, according to PJ, is on this thing. The idea, Pete Thamel writes, that would coincide with other changes, including the elimination of conference title games and moving the start of the season to week zero. Well, that part I'm for. It would also mean the football season would have to end earlier. That part I don't understand. Would have to end early. It wouldn't have to. You could choose to end it earlier if you want, which I think would be smart, as this upcoming season doesn't end until January 25th. Coach Day, who said this exact same thing to us when he was on with us a couple of weeks ago, the season needs to be pushed up. We need to finish the season much sooner. Let's have this all done by the first week of January so we can have a season that makes sense. The one thing that I absolutely... I mean, I can't stand a 24-teamer. We've been talking about it off and on for about 2 weeks. I can't stand it. I understand why PJ Fleck would want it. I get that because now he has something that he can shoot for. He can go 9-3 and he will make the playoff and he can tell his bosses, look, we're a playoff team. I mean, don't misconstrue this. There are two things this is about. There's the reason coaches are behind it is that one reason. Now we have something we can strive for that is attainable. PJ can't walk into his bosses at Minnesota and say, we can contend. I need this to be able to contend for a Big Ten championship. I need this to contend for a national championship. But he can go into his bosses and say, if you give me this, I can go 8-4. I can go 9-3 and I can make the playoff. And then if his bosses say, well, okay, but what does that mean? Like, are you a contender then? If you hooked him up to a lie detector test, he'd say, no, I'm not a contender, but I'm in the dance. I'm in the dance. And that'll mean a lot to our fans. And to Doug's point from a couple of weeks ago when he joined us on a Friday, that would be probably the biggest game in the history of Minnesota football. If somehow they got to host a playoff game, it would probably be the biggest game in Minnesota football. I don't care about it. I'm not going to care about it, but I understand why they do. And I understand why people like PJ are rallying for this. I don't understand why the top of the sport is rallying for this. That part I don't get.
So real quick on Pete Thamel's piece here at the top where he says outside the meeting rooms, it prominently featured the three national championship trophies won by the conference this year. And he talks about the Indiana football trophy and the two basketball trophies with UCLA and Michigan. Did they have the three shirt? Like, did they have a table right next to that where they were selling the football national championship shirts right there? Like, I feel like that should have been there next to it or make all the coaches wear that shirt this week. Bo, you said two things here, and I think you're mostly right on the one, but... when you say that about PJ Fleck, and you say he can't go to his boss and say, if you give me this, I can become a contender. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure we probably all said that about Indiana football, too.
Yeah.
I know Minnesota doesn't have the resources that Indiana does. It doesn't seem like with their boosters and their donors. But if you're feeling that way and you're PJ Fleck, Minnesota needs to get rid of him and find a new coach anyway. Because you should all be striving to win it all. You should all be doing everything you're doing to win it all. And I know some programs have limitations, but we all would have said that about Indiana the year before last. And I also think these coaches need to be very careful because there is going to be an initial, oh, you made the college football playoff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's easier to get in. So if you're not getting in, I don't think your job security is going to be great, quite frankly. It may have an initial bump.
Yeah.
But if you're not getting in this thing, what are we keeping you for?
I think it's both of those. I think it'll be that. In the initial, it'll be we make the playoff, and that'll be 3 to 5 years. And then eventually it'll evolve into, okay, you made the playoffs. Now go win a game. And they're all, it's all just kicking the can down the road, Isaiah. That's all it is.
And you think about, too, once you do expand to 24, when you're at 12 where we're at right now, like, you can still, from a committee standpoint, look at the top 15 teams and be able to discern decently on who should be in the top 12. I feel like once you get to 24 teams, it will be so political on the back end of deciding who gets into the playoff. Like, who really is, what's the difference between Illinois and Michigan when they both have three losses? Or Michigan and USC, or Michigan and Clemson? And so once you get so far down the line, I feel like it'll get so much more skewed into, well, how many teams does the Big Ten have in? Does the SEC need one or two more? What about the ACC? Have we included them yet?
And when you do that, and it's the thing I hate most about all of this, we start looking at who had the better losses. Who cares about losses?
Oh, that's coming, yeah.
Let's win games. Isn't this about winning? But this,
well, it is, well, yeah.
But we lost to Texas, and they're a little better than Texas A&M, so we deserve to be in. Like, yeah, that's awful. I hate that when we're breaking down who had the better loss.
Don't even think about it. Of the 24 teams, what does your gut tell you, first thing off the top of your head when I say, how many will be SEC Big Ten of 24?
I can't believe, but somebody said this the other day. I don't remember if it was on this show or if it was something else, where you're going to have eight from the SEC and the Big Ten, and that's just
so 16 that's of the 24.
Gross.
It's definitely going to be seven. Right away, I went seven or eight from each conference, and then the ACC is probably getting like three.
If they go three ACC, three Big 12 automatic, now you have 18 left. If you go seven automatic from the Big 10 and the SEC, now you have four left. You're going to go...
Notre Dame's going to get one of those.
Notre Dame's going to get one, and then you're going to go automatic qualifiers, maybe two, and then an at-large. That's where it's headed.
That is disgusting.
It is. Here's your seven. If it's seven, this is what it would have been last year. This is after it all was done, but you can play along. Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon, USC, Michigan, Iowa, Washington, Illinois, all automatic qualifiers. Guess who is eighth? Minnesota.
And somebody yesterday said, well, there's 130 college football Division I teams. That's, yeah. 24 is only 18%. That's way less than the others. And I know college football is changing a little bit here, but I would argue, like, the NFL, the difference between 1 and 32 is like the difference between 1 and 10 in college football.
I agree.
And the difference between the pro models and the college models is, the pro model, you might have Patrick Mahomes for 10 years. So you can just slot the Chiefs in, they're going to be there. At the college model, there's rollover. Like we saw with Indiana this year, there's opportunities to build a program. There are in the pro models too, but the turnover continually happens. And like we've said before, there's many a teams that have been ranked in the top 25 all across the college football landscape. Any team that you can think of in the past 10 years at some point has been in the top 25, but getting into the playoffs shouldn't be a free throw. Like, it should be chipping in for Eagle. Like, we cannot have it be anybody can do it. It needs to be something you strive for at the end of the year.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, I don't know that the SEC and ESPN can hold this off. I really don't know. There was so much momentum for this because everybody wants kind of what this is, which is a get out of jail free card. I said there were two reasons this were happening. So that's why it's happening from the coach's perspective. The reason it's happening from the suits perspective. And by the way, the suits in this conversation are the university presidents, athletic directors. The reason it's happening for them in the Big Ten, the reason the Big Ten is pushing this so hard is because they want this extra inventory for their television partners. That's what it's about. It's about getting Fox, NBC. We had Joshua Perry. We talked about this last week with him. He works for NBC. It's about getting Fox, NBC, giving them a bite at the playoff apple. Right now, this has been so haphazardly planned and executed that ESPN, which has the rights to the college football playoff exclusively, can't even air the games because of pre-existing contracts with other sports. That's why these games are on TNT a lot of times. They farm it out to TNT because they don't have the space. And oftentimes it's not an NFL game that they're broadcasting instead. Hell, last year it was college basketball. They were contractually obligated to show college basketball on those Saturdays where they jammed this playoff in, and that was only a 12-teamer. The other thing I really don't understand is how you're going to get all of this done by the first week of January. That part I don't get either. I don't know how there's enough weeks to go. Because you're going to have an 8-team play-in You're going to have 8 teams with byes, 16 play-ins. So you're going to have 8 games the first weekend that feed into 8 seeded teams. You're going to have to jam it in there in a big, big way. If this all loses, I don't know a single person I've talked to. Bob and I talked about this in between lacrosse games on Saturday. It can't be anybody who wants this.
But yet they're going to make a ton of money, and the new TV contracts will, and I'm guessing we're all going to watch. So the only way this doesn't win for them is we all boycott and don't watch it. But we know that's not going to happen. We're all going to watch.
And the only
thing that can hold it off is the SEC right now and ESPN. ESPN, really, more even than the SEC. Go ahead, Isaiah.
And even with, you know, diluting the regular season, which is what this will do, whether you like it or not, it will dilute the regular season. But the ratings during the regular season will still be there. Like for college football, the ratings are still going to be there. And so it's just a double win for the TV money. And then you get to the end of the line. The only thing I could see that could be an issue is you start running into crossover with the NFL maybe a little bit once you get to the playoff time. Like maybe that could hurt ratings, but more games means more money. That's what it means.
That's all, yeah. And it's going to end up prevailing. Austin, in 2 minutes on all of that and more, Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
He knows everything about the Buckeyes. He's been offered tens of dollars by a certain team to spill his secrets. He's told that certain team to go to hell.
Damn you all to hell!
He's Austin Ward.
And joining this week on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline from his third floor corner suite at the Terranera Resort in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. How's the view of the Pacific Ocean this morning, buddy?
Who told you this information?
Well, I just assumed the Big Ten held their media days at this posh resort in Southern California. I assumed the entire beat was able to go and get rooms and probably some media golf and maybe a little deep sea adventure. None of that stuff's taking place, buddy.
You know what's weird about this, Bo, is that the Big Ten hasn't turned that into, you know, a main media attraction.
Sure.
Even
is.
When, 17, 18 years ago, back when I was covering Tennessee, that people were like, well, you're going to Destin in late May. I was like, why? I've never heard of anyone needing to cover these events. Like, they're not going to actually accomplish all that much. It's largely, they do have meetings. They do discuss things that are, you know, pressing business, but like, it's not, there aren't players there. It's one coach and maybe the athletic director. And, you know, it's the middle of the off season. Like, that's crazy. But that has been the approach, and you're already seeing. I just read a story from Seth Emerson on The Athletic, though, about them preparing for SEC meetings, and that's still over a week and a half away, like previewing that as a major event. And like, that has not ever been the case for the Big Ten. Probably not for lack of effort on Tony Petitti's behalf, but also you and I both know that he has been pretty reclusive when it comes to interview opportunities. So maybe he won't change that. And I won't have to worry about traveling out there, although the golf does sound pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I was just talking about this off the top of the hour, buddy. Like, this is not a place that's doable for 90% of the beat? So they opened it up, like the beat can come now, and the coaches will be available. Yep. Pete Thamel's there, Emers, you know, people are there, they're reporting on it. But this isn't a place that 90% of the beat can get to. And so it's like a half measure from the league. And yet somehow they're kind of still winning this because it feels like inevitably we're going to get to a 24, which is kind of the main marching orders that everyone's kind of been given. But to me, it feels like you have to have this somewhere where the majority of your constituency is, or it's never going to be covered and it defeats the purpose, let alone the 3-hour time change.
Yeah, it does. It's very strange. And as you said, it's not only that the media can come if they are aware of it, but they're not publicizing it. They did not send out media hotel rates. They did not send out credential information for this. They don't treat it as an actual media event. And that's fine. I am not complaining about that. I had a great weekend here in Columbus with the girls. So, you know, I don't necessarily need another opportunity to go cover. But if that's what you want it to be, which Tony Petitti is doing in most scenarios, all he can to make this a 365 day a year enterprise for the Big Ten. But as you said, he's doing it often with half measures, and he doesn't really want cameras and microphones in front of his face. And at this point right now, as you're looking with the PR battle that is going to be waging between 24 and 16, because the SEC and Greg Sankey have still not at least publicly budged on their desire to do that. And they have the backing of ESPN to not go beyond 14. They don't want those games bidded out. We all know that. We've covered that ground over and over. But, you know, there are still a lot of, for all the things that Tony Petitti has done to put eyeballs on the Big Ten, he resists putting them on himself. And what that means is, and there are a lot of things going on with NIL, with, you know, contracts, all these other things that we know we beat into the ground on a lot of Mondays. But, you know, if the highest profile battle is going to be between Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey for what the playoff format could look like, who's going to win the PR battle? It's the one that invites all the cameras and all the media and has done that for the last, you know, 25 years down there in Destin. So it's strange to me, because it often feels like Tony Petitti is doing a lot of little finger work behind the scenes, but, you know, to win the hearts and minds of people, you're going to have to be out there more publicly like Ned Stark.
Well, I loved all the, that was well done on you. Let me ask, although he did lose his head, so sometimes that can happen. Let me ask you this.
That doesn't always work, yeah.
Have you talked to a single person who wants a 2014 playoff?
Let's see. No, I don't. I haven't talked to Josh Heupel, though. I think he wants it. I think he
sure
wants
he does.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of fans, no, I haven't. I bet there are people out there that like the idea. And to go back to, you know, Tony Petitti and the lack of PR, I think, you know, if he had more clearly described the vision, I think I made this point to you a week or two ago about what the conference championship weekend and playing in, and that look. Yeah, you know, like I think he might have been able to win more people over to that side. I don't know if it would have been you or me, but it was an interesting idea that was never really publicly explained by him or anyone in the Big Ten. So in terms of media coverage, in terms of fans that I've talked to, whether that's, you know, on the street or on Letterman Row, nobody is behind this idea. And I don't really understand how gung-ho they have to be about it, and or why they are, because everyone is looking at this for the repercussions, and the coaches will say, oh, we didn't know about these unintended consequences of devaluing the regular season. Well, you should, because we all can see that that's what's going to happen, and we've been saying that over and over and over. So, you know, I think that they feel like they could win some points back by scheduling games or continuing to schedule things like Ohio State and Alabama during the regular season, Ohio State, Georgia, Notre Dame, Miami, whatever it is. But those games are not going to carry the same consequence. And we're also going to get used to seeing them play more frequently in the playoff, whether that's 12, where we've already seen that happen, or 16. In 24, that, you know, what point would there be at all to having those games in September? They would be inconsequential at best and totally meaningless at worst.
So PJ Fleck is quoted in this piece by Pete Thamel, where he says 18 of 18 coaches want a 2014 playoff. And I've heard Ryan volunteer the 2014 playoff.
Yeah.
Why does Ohio State want a 2014 playoff? What are they getting out of it? They got to get more, right?
Yeah. I think that they are viewing this as being a team player for the sake of the Big Ten. I don't think they're going to stand in the way of that. If it is beneficial, if they have been convinced, which I think they have been, by Tony Petitti, that this amount of money is going to come in through the broadcast deal, this amount of opportunities that are available to the league is better for everyone. If Ohio State plays along with all of this, they're not going to be impacted. They're already not. The 12 no. and 16, 24, whatever it is, Ohio State has qualified for every version of the playoff, and they will in perpetuity, no matter what it looks like. So they don't. I just don't think that they feel necessary to draw a line in the sand on this. If there are enough people and the push is for the Big Ten to go along with it, that they don't need to use their power, which they increasingly have over the last couple of years. I think back to you and I having conversations 6 or 7 years ago, Bo, and it was like, why don't they, if they want this, why won't they flex? Mm-hmm. They're Ohio State. They're the flagship. They're doing that, I think, at a much more consistent and higher level than they ever have. But they're going to, I think, keep the powder dry on this particular issue because the one that matters to them most is looming in 2030. If they do reallocate the way the pie is handed out, if they have more flexibility to schedule when they want or to play a trump card if they know that they need a night game or want a night game, whatever it is, I think that this is a battle that's like, what's the point of arguing against it? If it feels inevitable for the Big Ten and there is a way to enhance the revenue, all right, let that happen and then save the struggle for another day. And I think that's where they are because it just, the size of the playoff, Ohio State is relatively unique in that when we evaluate how meaningless some of these non-conference games could be or access to the playoff, or watering down the regular season, that only really applies to a couple programs, and Ohio State is at the top of that list. That's a first world problem for them mm-hmm. that not all their games might matter as much as they could for Iowa or Minnesota or whoever. So I think that this is a situation where they can sit in the back of the room and let them all weigh it out what they want to do. And Ohio State's got their eyes on something that's a little bit further down the horizon that will actually more directly impact their standing in college football.
Yeah, this is going to be a very delicate dance that they're trying to do. Interesting to see what the messaging that comes out of the Terranea Resort this this week out in Rancho Palos Verdes. All right, buddy, good stuff as always. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, both of you.
All right, there he goes. Austin Ward, The Beat with Austin Berman, Letterman Rowe on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do Thing or Not a Thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day. The Fan.
Amazon Business.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Man and Timmy, they're good, clean boys. If you enjoy a radio show hosted by immature men with slightly above average sports knowledge, they've got you covered.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
The best facial hair on the air. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little Thing or Not a Thing on a Monday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or Not a Thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
Scotty Scheffler this weekend finished tied for 14th, just outside of the top 10. He was 2 under par at the PGA Championship. It's the first time that Scotty has finished outside the top 10 in the last 6 majors. Bo, you were talking earlier about the U.S. Open-like conditions at the PGA. After his round on Friday, Scheffler showed that he was not really a fan of the pin positions at Aronimink.
This is the hardest set of pin locations that I've seen since I've been on tour, and that includes U.S. Opens, that includes Oakmont. I asked Fuchs, who caddies for Justin Rose, he's been around a long time, and I asked Teddy too. In the middle of today's round, I was like, have y'all seen anything like this before? And they said maybe Shinnecock is the only place they've seen that had pins that could compare to this. But like, it's different in a sense on this golf course because like Oakmont, like their greens are extremely severe, but they're extremely severe in one direction. Here it's like, the green may slope all this way, and then we put the pin down here, and then there's also a slope this way, and like, it's not as how would you say, natural to the slopes that are there. There's a bit more, I think, that's manufactured into the greens. And, I mean, it's just very difficult. I mean, it's difficult to get the ball close to the hole. It's difficult to hold putts, especially when you have big slopes and wind. And I think that's why you see the scores, you know, so close to par.
Thing or not a thing?
It's a thing when the number one player in the world points something out anytime, right? Especially after a major. I think from a fan perspective, not a thing. I don't know what you're supposed to do at a place like this if not for the greens. They don't have trees anymore, so there's nothing really punitive there. Really, the only defense the course has is the greens. If the greens are pretty straightforward, then you're going to have guys 20 under par. Everybody's playing the same course. Rothman would maybe have a better feel on this. Timmy, somebody who's played a lot of, I mean, somebody playing a lot of competitive golf. To me, it feels like you're all playing the same pins. Guys shot 65 on the weekend. That's 5 under in a major. That's pretty dang good. To me, maybe the problem was just the combination of the pins and the wind, which was really a Friday issue. Maybe that's what had him a little bit upset. The fairness of them would be something that I would be ill-equipped to be able to discuss. But I also could say that if they didn't make the pin positions extreme, or extreme by Scotty's estimation, what's the point? Everyone's going to shoot 62. There's no trees. Like, I mean, if you don't have hazards, there's no water, there's no trees. It's just bunkers. So, like, if you don't have it, what do you have?
And it was something that was talked about over the course of the weekend. And then you get to Sunday, and Scotty finishing outside the top 10. I don't think it's a thing for fans. I mean, obviously it was a thing for Scotty all weekend, unfortunately. But for me, it sounds like an elite golfer didn't play his greatest game and annoyed at the course. And I'm sure the people at the USGA are probably smiling somewhere saying, oh, the pin positions were hard? It's supposed to be hard. But for all of the golfers, like you said, you're playing the same course. I know that when you tee off throughout the day, things can get different. But at the same time, do you want people finishing 18 under? Is that what we want? Probably not. No. I know it probably makes it more exciting maybe for TV, seeing the birdies and the eagles. But at the end of the day, every course is different and everybody's playing the same one. Not a thing for me.
Yeah, I think that's your thing right there, Isaiah, is 2 years ago, Xander Schauffele was minus 21. This last year, Scotty was minus 11. Now, Aaron Rye was minus 9, but he was 3 strokes ahead of everybody else. It was minus 6, minus 5, minus 4. I prefer seeing these guys shoot, you know, minus 5, minus 6, rather than minus 20. So yeah. I will take this weekend all day.
Yeah, one of the things Rory kind of was talking about was when you have a course like this in the setup, you don't have a lot of there. He basically laid this out. There's not a big chance for double bogey. You'll make bogey. You can make a lot of pars. And that's why they had 40 people within a couple of shots of the leaderboard, which if you were locked into this had to feel like a win. Because anybody could have won it on Sunday, Bake.
Yeah. And I think this weekend was much better than some others that I've seen. Speaking of the PGA, I kind of forgot this, Bo, until I think it was Michael Collins. I saw him doing a thing on it.
Okay.
Fans with general admission tickets at the PGA, they will have they get unlimited access to market concessions at Aronimink this past weekend. Those included hot dogs, cheeseburgers, plant-based burgers, salads, as well as breakfast items like chicken biscuits, donuts, Lay's chips, Roll Gold pretzels, nacho cheese Doritos, Rice Krispie Holy treats, cow. Grandma's oatmeal raisin cookies. There was also Gatorade, water, and pop. When you go to the PGA Champ Market Concessions, you get unlimited one drink, entree, and snack per stop. If you wanted alcoholic beverages, those are sold separately with prices starting at $15. There is no limit on the number of times fans can return to the concession stand. However, the website does note abuse or excessive utilization could lead to suspension or being banned from access to prevent food waste and unauthorized sharing of the tickets. Thing or not a thing?
First thing I thought of was when Kramer gets the lawsuit that Jackie Childs is actually going to get him a payout for, and instead he just gets like free cafe lattes for life as like his whole operation. He's just sucking down cafe lattes left and right. I just imagine people like trying to suck down hot dogs and cheeseburgers to make this somehow worth it. Good on them. good on them. To me, this would be, I'm guessing they didn't have many problems with this at all. Like, who's going to want to get six cheeseburgers or six hot dogs? Like, you only eat so much of this stuff. And for the most part, this looks like not necessarily health-based options. So your stomach's going to be a grumbling if you suck down too much of this stuff. I'm trying to think, like, if this were me, I feel like I'd go chicken biscuit in the morning. I'm assuming that's like a Chick-fil-A thing, right? Like one of their chicken biscuit things, like that type of a... Is that how you would read that?
I'm not sure about the morning breakfast. I would guess that. They did have chicken sandwiches like later in the day, and they said those were grilled chicken.
Okay, and then they have salad. So I would probably go breakfast sandwich in the morning. Like if I was going to be there all day, I'd probably go breakfast sandwich in the morning. I'd come back around lunch for... I'd probably try and suck down a salad if there was one to get me a little balance. And then nacho cheese Doritos. Come on, that's the king of all chips, is it not? I mean, am I wrong? Isn't that the king of all chips?
I think it's pretty
undefeated?
Good.
They're undefeated.
Huge thing. Fan experience nowadays is so few and far between when you can go anywhere and be able to affordably, I know you already paid for the ticket, but affordably eat while you're there. I know some people online, as I scroll through Twitter, they wanted the beer included too. Now that you get a little bit dicey there.
Can't do that.
You can't have the beer included. That's dicey.
We already had enough yelling. We didn't need more. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now you got real drunk in public.
But the food, that's a huge plus. And then you can also, you justify the ticket that way. Sometimes when you get any kind of extra incentive, then when you spend the money, you can make up for it inside when you eat 10 hot dogs. And going over the top with the food typically never happens. Even think about going to a Columbus Clippers game on Dime a Dog night.
Sure.
How many Dime a Dogs are you eating? Probably 4 or 5 if you're really getting after it.
Absolutely. What would be you guys' approach here? What would be your game plan with this free setup?
I think I would definitely be laying in heavy into the cheeseburgers. I probably would go donuts early in the morning, and then I would just be rocking probably the cheeseburgers and then Doritos late, maybe a Rice Krispie treat on the way.
Bo, I think the chicken biscuit in the morning is the right way. Maybe grab a donut with that. Then I'm thinking, I'm with Isaiah, grab you a burger and some Doritos. Make sure you're drinking plenty of water to stay hydrated there. And
still spending money on a couple beers.
Yeah, there you go. You know something I can't do? I don't know why. Well, I do know why. I can't do a chicken sandwich with an egg. There's something in my head about the meat of the
chicken
animal
and the egg
that's producing the egg that I can't do. I just can't do it. People do it. They'll put an egg on a chicken. I'm like, well, hold on. That's mom and baby. It's all happening. I can't do that.
I believe about 6 months ago, Tyvus did this experience at the Bojangles and got an egg on his chicken biscuit, and he said it was life-changing.
I just don't. I can't do it. It's something mentally I can't do with that. We'll blitz the weekend coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Getting a little...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. How about those Cleveland Cavaliers? They're back in the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since 2018. They hammered the Pistons last night in Game 7, 125-94. Donovan Mitchell led the way with 26 nice games from Jared Allen and Evan Mobley as well. Allen with 23, Mobley 21-12. Aaron Rye's 70-foot putt on the 17th hole was the final nail in the coffin. He wins the PGA Championship at 9 under par. Rye shot a final round 5 under 65. Becoming the first Englishman to win the tournament in 109 years. The Cleveland Guardians took round one of the Ohio Cup. They beat the Reds 10-3 yesterday. The Guards head to Detroit tonight to start a series with the Tigers at 6:40 at the same time. The Reds and Philly taking on the Phillies. This one's sponsored by United Dairy Farmers. Try UDF's new ice cream quake flavors for the summer, only for a limited time.
The friends are the guests and listeners. Risa and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Monday edition of the program. We kick it off by blitzing the weekend. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present a Weekend Sports Blitz.
Sponsored by Metal Supermarkets. Visit metalsupermarkets.com/Columbus for all your metal needs.
Bake, lead us off. I believe I had that. What did you have, buddy?
I believe I had that Aaron Rye, as the day was going on yesterday, was going to be okay. It seemed like that he had guys kind of come up and come down, and then this guy would make a charge at him, but he just seemed to be the steadiest guy. So as that round was kind of unfolding and Rye was kind of hitting the back nine, he was like, you know what, I think he's going to be okay here. And then he was not even okay. He just kind of pulled away a little bit there at the end and gets the three-stroke lead. Now, I don't know if anybody had him hitting a 70-foot putt like that that's going to be the signature moment of this win, but he just seemed like the guy that was the most consistent as the day went on.
Yeah. Isaiah?
For me, it was yesterday, and I talked about this with Bake early on. I think I was a little bit of twisting my words in the morning to try to make myself feel better about the Cavs going into Game 7. But I did say yesterday, sometimes when it feels like you're the favorite and you're playing at home in Game 7, if things don't go your way, that arena can get tense really quick. And boy, did it for Detroit yesterday. The Cavs jump all over them. And then the Pistons got kind of tight. The offense wasn't there. Cade couldn't get it going early enough and definitely didn't have the help. But I did have that if you don't put them away early at home in Game 7, your own home court advantage can really work against you.
Isaiah, we talk about that all the time in regard to Buckeye football. It's something that isn't talked about a lot. Home nervy crowd is a lot to overcome, and it can swallow up the home team if you start quickly, and they did yesterday. I believe I had that Ohio weather is absolutely bonkers. Ohio spring is just an insane ride. We are in Canton for lacrosse on Wednesday. Well, we're there all weekend, but we were there Saturday when I ran into Bob, and we had an hour plus lightning cold rain delay, right? An hour plus. And when this started, it was probably around 60 degrees, something like that. So plenty cold and all of this. By yesterday, when although NBC got hurt, well, by the time his team played in the championship, it was 82 in 24 hours. I mean, it is just a roller coaster every single day. Hopefully we are settled in now. I know this week's got a little bit of stuff, but hopefully we're settled in now and we are to summer and we can kind of enjoy this a little bit. I did not have that, Bake. What did you not have?
I did not have exactly how much sports I would consume this weekend. I was pretty locked in all weekend long on the Ohio Cup series between the Reds and Guardians. I watched the Preakness on Saturday night.
Yeah.
A lot of the PGA Championship on the weekend. And then I watched all but like the last 4 or 5 minutes of the Cavs game last night. So I was surprised how much the sports would have me, and I was surprised how long I would have that game on last night. I turned it on because I knew we were going to be talking about it. And I stayed, even though it was a blowout, and even though till the very end, I was there last night. So I was surprised about that.
For me, I did not have the Guardians just popping off on the Reds yesterday. The home run hitting was pretty unbelievable. Jose Ramirez.
You don't have to rub it in.
Yeah, I'm rubbing it in the dirt. Jose with one. DeLauder with one. Manzardo with two. Angel Martinez hits one. And then Rocchio puts one in as well. The Guardians' bat's getting hot. And me and Bake were talking yesterday about how the Reds and Guardians, up and down, that's how it goes during the baseball season. But the one thing that's consistent for the Guardians is just the lack of offense over the course of the past couple of years, and seeing them being able to put it together yesterday warmed my heart.
I don't know how I did not have this. I did not have or did not realize that Bob and I have sons the same age. I did not realize that. I knew that our kids were all kind of around the same age, but I did not know that we had one the same age. So his middle, Cullen, and my my middle, Beamsy, are the exact same age. They played each other. I didn't even realize it. It was raining, so I didn't even see Bob there throughout the entire game in the semifinals, and we talked afterwards. But we're going to see a lot of each other here in the next few years. So I did not realize that until this weekend. Knew they were around the same age, but not the exact same age. Player who impressed. Who do you got, Bake?
To me, it's Jared Allen. I know he just keeps taking slings and arrows from the Cavs fans, but every time I've paid attention to a Cavs game, I think that he's been fantastic. And I know Donovan Mitchell, he's the alpha on that team, and he led the way last night. He was in control. But they don't do what they did last night, and they don't play the way that they did without Jared Allen. And I think the dude's kind of unfairly gets some criticism.
Yeah.
I spoke on Don earlier and gave him his flowers, but Sam Merrill taking that charge from Assur Thompson, I mean, into his face, the rest of the game, you just saw him messing with his lips the entire time. I thought he chipped his tooth initially, and then he went on to hit five threes, put up 23 points. He was fantastic through the course of that game. And something about Sam Merrill just catch and shoot is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. He has one of the most pure jumpers on the team, and it's nice when he's hitting. And yesterday, played tough after getting absolutely obliterated, taking a charge there.
Always on green, as my kids say, when he shoots. Must be something to do with 2K, I'm guessing. Player who impressed, Will Ferrell on Saturday Night Live. I don't watch it regularly, but I love Ferrell, and I started getting fed like a lot of the skits from this weekend. It seems like he knocked it out of the park. He's probably my favorite SNL cast member of all time in terms of his ability, and that's saying a lot because they've had some massive ones, but his run, he could play about every single character you'd want, could do the slapstick stuff, could do the highbrow stuff, and he crushed based on what I saw this weekend on Saturday Night Live.
Or was it Chad Smith?
How great is that off the top, right? Come on. Like, have the Chili Peppers guy, the drummer, come out there. And they look so similar. I just loved it. I thought they crushed. What I saw, they crushed it. I'm going to watch the whole episode. Player who disappointed, Bake, who disappointed for you?
To me, it was the fans at the PGA Championship. And like I said, I know fans for years have been yelling. You had the Baba Booey forever. And I just didn't get it. And it was every shot yesterday. And it was nonsense. And the stuff with Rory that you talked about earlier, Bo, there's just, and I am one of those people that I think golf is too stuffy. I really do. I just don't understand this. Make it make sense to me.
I agree.
Player for me was Tobias Harris yesterday. I mean, really anybody on the Pistons other than Cade Cunningham, he couldn't get a second guy going, and it was what eventually became the biggest fault for them, was they had no offense outside of Cade. If it wasn't Cade, then nobody else was getting buckets yesterday, and Tobias Harris cannot be your number two. He can barely be your number three. He had spurts during the playoffs and during the Cavs series where he was solid, but yesterday, 0-for-6 from the field in Game 7. Brutal.
Sure was. Player who disappointed, Tony Petitti. Hey, Tone, we are your fine bomb. Invite us to Rancho Palos Verdes. We'll broadcast this show every day from the pavilion at Terranea. All we need is a little bit of lodging, round of golf. Who gets hurt, Bake? I mean, like, how are we not involved in this? They get Feinbaum up there for SEC. Where are we?
Well, they'll need to sponsor it too, Bo. So all this found money that they've got, they're going to have to throw a little this way so we can get out there and do it.
Just put us on the company jet. We'll do it. We'll take care of the rest. Give us some accommodations. We're ready to go.
The Comrex and an internet line. Let's go.
It's all we need. Bud Kilmer, honorary coach of the week, Bake. Who do you got?
To me, it's Justin Hare. The job that he has done here at Ohio State in his two seasons is pretty impressive. And I remember when they hired Justin Hare and looking into him, I thought he was the right guy for this job because he's an Ohioan. What he did at Campbell, where he had to do all of his fundraising, really do everything on his own, and he had that program as a contender. I thought that it would work. It was a rough year last year for him, but to go from the bottom of the Big Ten, basically, where you were next to last, to sixth in this week's Big Ten tournament, and doing something that the Buckeye baseball team hasn't done since 1994, sweeping Michigan on the road. That's a damn good job out of Justin Hare.
For me, Coach of the Week's coming out of Cleveland, Not the Cavs, not the Gardos, but Todd Monken.
Oh!
As Jeremy Fowler reports, he's hit it off with Deshaun Watson early. He's got some offensive concepts for him that he's excelled in the past. And I'm telling you, people, the breadcrumbs are dropping, and it's coming every week. So be ready in the fall, because I think I know who's starting a quarterback.
Well, if you listen to this show, I've been saying this for a while. This was trending, was heading in this direction for a while. Yeah, that's, yeah, and this is a cool thing about Todd. He will build it for the talent that he has. He's not saying, you got to run my stuff. He will say, what do you like, and what can I do to get the best out of it? And he'll build it that way. And the player, think about this from Todd's perspective. Probably the best offenses he ever coordinated are the ones he did for the Ravens. Lamar Jackson's best seasons as a pro were there. There are some similarities between those two quarterbacks. So you could kind of see maybe how all of this was going. I'm going to echo you, though, Bake. I think Justin Hare is the answer to this one. You could have gone Kenny Atkinson here. You could have gone into different ways. But I'm going to go Justin Hare. I think that's an incredible job, incredible amount of momentum in a short amount of time in a job that to me felt like a no-way-out job. Now it feels like maybe he could be building something here. I think there's a ceiling on it. Northern baseball is always going to have a ceiling. But I think this has been a hell of a year. And to go to Ann Arbor and get a sweep, good job out of him. All right, coming up next, a letter to the editor? Yeah, that's right. We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
A lot has changed in 30 years, but we're still that old shoe that feels worn in and well-loved. And, well, we smell a little, but oof, you've accepted that. The Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's T-Bone.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Jack has personally invited the Fan to the Memorial Tournament, and we're broadcasting 30 hours of live content, and we'll try not to embarrass ourselves.
Sponsored by Ohio for Responsible Gambling.
Visit pausebeforeyouplay.org.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plenty of sunshine today, and it will be breezy, humid, and warm with highs again into the upper 80s to low 90s in some spots. For tonight, mostly cloudy overnight with our lows down into the 70s, and we'll still see those breezy winds, which will persist into your Tuesday. Mostly sunny to start and breezy with chances of showers and storms developing in the afternoon and evening. Highs will be in the upper 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 weather impact forecast.
Matty Ice is currently bathing himself in creamy jalapeno dip.
And I've officially run out of ways to tease this show.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan. When General Sherman marched through Georgia, he was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
And join us for the Fan 5K presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center. It's a 5K run, 1 mile walk. It's happening Saturday, June 20th at Otterbein. Some of your favorite Fan personalities will be there. Brother Bone, Nephew Tyvus, Man, Timmy Hall, Reese, they'll all be there. Every participant gets a finisher's medal and a race shirt, free photos, awesome gifts from Logan Services. The Fan 5K is presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center. Sign up today at 971therace.com. I saw this in the Skull Session from 11 Warriors, who they always do such a great job with that of kind of rounding everything up. And they saw this in the Columbus Dispatch in their letter to the editor's page. Yeah, we've come a long way from where the gross majority of the folks listening would receive a newspaper every morning. My guess is very few of you do currently, but you're still able to read it online or wherever. And I do think that this type of a forum is one that we all want to make sure that there is a voice, whether it's our medium. And that's one of the things we do with High Guys. One of the things we do with, certainly the mailbag segment on Thursday. Sites do it with message boards. You just want to make sure that everybody is heard from. And I think a lot of times, probably, we're at fault of this too, and I am. We think about college football at the very, very top of it. And we talk about national titles and television and NIL and all of these things. But there is also a very normal constituency that attends these games and has been for years. Oftentimes, we went to the game last year against Ohio. The guy sitting right to the left of us, two guys been going to games together for like 30 years, same seats for 30 years, and it's just part of their routine and part of who they are. So this is a letter to the Dispatch, letter to the editor of the Dispatch, that goes as follows. My wife and I are longtime Ohio State football season ticket holders. After receiving the survey email from Ohio State, reading Rob Aller's comments regarding the stadium restrooms, and finally your published letters, I have a few comments. Rather than having our athletic director and his entourage review the consolidated survey responses from ticket holders and view the recommendations of potential actions to take, why don't they personally experience what we season ticket holders do? This coming season, I suggest they divide up and sit individually in the seats we common folks sit in. No premium seating or seats between the 20-yard lines. And experience what it's like to stand up to let one other ticket holder pass by for their seat, standing in line for concessions and the time they had to wait to use the restrooms. At a game last year, I left my seat with 3 minutes left in the first half to use the restroom and get my wife and me some snacks and bottled water. The lines were so long that I returned to our seats halfway through the third quarter. My wife attempted to contact me, but the weak Wi-Fi did not allow her messages to go through. I believe an experience such as this would provide the AD and his staff more valuable feedback than a filtered survey. He's right, but also there's not a lot of money in this, and that's the sad reality of it, is that this isn't the priority. Maybe it ought to be, and maybe this idea that he pushes out here is something that they should do. Go sit in Gen Pop, go sit on a steel bleacher, go sit without a seat back, and go see how good that experience is, because this guy and the tens of thousands like him are what allow you to get 105,000 people in that place. And their experience had better be good, because I'm going to tell you something else. His kids' kids aren't going to be doing it. There's a generation of people who are used to going to games. They're going to games. My generation kind of still used to going to games. Most people my age and probably Bake's age who are rabid fans still go to games, love to go to games, and it's a big part of their life. The generation older than us was a big go to games generation. My kids' generation is not a big go to games generation yet. Now, they're not in control of their own purse strings, and so there's a little bit of that. Isaiah, is your generation a go to games generation?
I think it depends on where you live at, where you're from, if your dad took you or not, if that's important to you. But I don't think it's as important to people my age as it was to people older than me.
In fact, I think the term season ticket is going to go the way of the dodo bird. I think people buying seat, going to every game. Can you imagine, let's use the Jackets. Can you imagine going to 41 hockey games? Now, Bake probably did.
Actually, I can.
Because you did. So you're one of the sickos who does that. Now, but to be fair, you're media.
I'm one of the few.
You're covering the team. So you're doing that. But can you imagine signing up for 41 times going to the arena? Now, I can sell that a little bit because it's winter in Ohio, and now it's something to do on a Tuesday night, and now it's my social too. All of that seems pretty cool. But to go to every game, even in college football, the National Football League, are people going to be buying season tickets and going to 12? You're going to be going to 9 NFL games, no matter what the results are, no matter what the weather is, no matter what the conditions are, what your team's record is, you're going to go? I don't think so. I don't think the generations younger than us are at all. Their minimum standard for what is acceptable is so high because of what they've become accustomed to.
So I don't think the season ticket is going to totally go away, but I think the season ticket has and is changing in the fact that, and this might be part of the problem with some of the things we talk about, you have a lot of businesses buying mm-hmm. season tickets that they use to give out to clients, or they use for business meetings, or to use it in their sales and attract clients. So it's a ticket that maybe not the same person is using every time. And you also have a lot of people that buy season tickets, especially for Ohio State, just to sell them on the resale market. So you're still going to have a few, but you're not going to have a whole section that has been coming to games for 30 years and only missed a handful of games. And, you know, they walk in and they're like, hey, Jim, and hey, Bob, and hey, Susie, like, you're not going to have that anymore. But you still have the season ticket and the fact that people are using them for business purposes, whether that be expanding their business or reselling.
And we're here in Columbus. This isn't just a horseshoe problem. This is a across-the-sports landscape problem. Any game you go to in any city, you go up to Cleveland, you go to a Browns game, you're going to have to wait long lines for the bathroom. You're going to have no Wi-Fi when the game's over. Hopefully, you keep your loved ones close to you, because if you get separated, you're not finding them. And those are some of the things that they're hard. It's clearly hard for these professional sports organizations, for Ohio State, to figure out how to make it work. But also, has anyone attempted? Has anyone attempted to make the fan experience that much better? Has anyone been to a game where there were no lines in the bathroom and you walked out with nachos immediately? Like, some of it has to be realistic, too.
Well, I'll tell you the place that you can do that, and that's Jerry World. Because when he designed it so you never had to wait for a bathroom or a beer. That's the objective. So, are people doing it? Yeah, I mean, the Haslams are doing it. That's what they're building that stadium for. So that you're not waiting for beer and all of that. And now, not everybody has those billions to do something like that. And there certainly, I don't think, are billions hidden in the seat cushions around here to make the shoe what you're going to have, you know, up in Brook Park. That's not in the cards. But I do think that it got late quick for sports and fandom. All of a sudden, it snuck up on us and it's like, oh, we demand more. Like, all of a sudden, the TVs got better at home. Cheaper. You can go get an 85-inch TV from one of the warehouses for $1,200. 85-inch HD TV, $1,200. That used to be $6,000. It's more affordable than ever. It's better than ever to be at home. And for the longest time, there was arrogance of team owners, people in charge of stadiums and all of it that, well, they'll come because what else are they going to do? Well, if you think that, like, pressure is being applied to these people now, wait until my kids' generation gets up there. They're in an on-demand lifestyle. They're not waiting for it. Their whole life is. They just talk to a phone and say, hey, play this, do this, watch this, whenever they want. You think they want to wait half of halftime and half of a quarter to get back in their seat? No, they're not. They're not going to do that. And there's a generation that aren't going to do it. And so this is something that ought to be top priority for ROSP, and it's not going to be easy. But making the shoe a place that is consistently a place where people are going to want to go more than just the Ohio State-Michigan game, more than the game against Oregon, more than the game against Bama, that you're just going to want to go every single time and continue to have sellouts. It is a massive issue. Question I want to ask both of you guys in 2 minutes on this front. Bishop and Friends, right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah. They've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Reeser's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
When you guys go to a game as a fan, if you could pick one thing that is an A-plus from that experience, one thing, what is it? So, among the options, parking, seating, concessions, bathrooms, Wi-Fi, what is the most singularly most important thing for you when attending a game that will at least get you started and saying, all right, I'm happy now?
I think there's two things that would make an experience better for me. I know, but I don't know which one this is.
You're not a rule follower, Bake?
I never have been.
Renegade.
I think cheap, easy, accessible parking is huge. And you know I love going to Blue Jackets games. It's my number one thing. But I think the best thing in this city is going to a Clippers game, because if there's not everything going on down in the arena district, you can get cheap, easy parking. It's $8 to get in the door. The concessions aren't awful. They're not great there price-wise, but they're not awful. I think for the price, it's the best thing to do, and one of those is because of the parking.
So parking, what was your second one? Well, we're just curious.
Cheaper concession prices, whether that be a beer or food. Like, some of these concession prices are ridiculous. Like, if you're paying $14 for a 24-ounce beer, they are making so much money, it's unreal.
So, basically, you're an Arthur Blank guy, because he kept concessions low for Falcons games. That was his big thing when they built Mercedes-Benz, is he was going to keep concessions low. By the way, they have a Chick-fil-A in there that isn't open on Sundays. So for them, it's open like
insane.
Three times a year for them. It's open for the SEC games that are held there, obviously, but not for the many of the Falcons games. Isaiah, what's the number one thing for you?
For me, it's the bathrooms. I have to be able to get up at any moment, get to the bathroom, and not have to wait in a long line. If it's a long line for the bathroom, that adds so much stress, because then I'm sitting in my seat as I'm watching the game, and as I can feel having to use the restroom coming on, I have to formulate a game plan on when during this drive I'm going to go, and then how long I'm going to be gone for. So preferably just quick and easy, in and out bathroom stops. It cannot be a long process. I'd like to be able to not be stressed out during the game about wetting myself.
I used to have just an iron bladder. Like, there was, you know, now I'm old, so now I got to go to the bathroom a lot more. But when I was young, like, you know, I would not go to the restroom an entire game. I'd be able to hold it, like, no problems at all. So, for me, guys, it's seats. I'm not talking about the angle. I'm talking about the comfortability. And I don't know if it's as I've gotten older, but if you are going to present me with a steel bleacher as my seating option, that is not a fun 4 hours. There's no amount of moving that I can do to make that comfortable. I'm basically going to stand up at every opportunity that I get. So to me, that's the number one thing. That's my number one thing. The rest of the stuff I'll deal with. But if I'm power ranking them, I think the quality of the seat is really important to me as I've gotten older. My kids, you know, I don't know that makes much of a difference to them. But if they're on one of the steel bleachers, that's a tougher sell for them at the Shoe. Sell for me, not them.
I guess I haven't sat in one of the steel bleachers in a while, but I know I went down this past fall down to Cincinnati for a Bearcats game with my brother, and the steel bleachers are brutal because your back starts hurting about halfway through the game. It's not comfortable on your butt. It's not fun to be sitting in.
Now, we were in Lawrence, and we had great seats in Lawrence when I took Beamsy to the Kansas game, and they're just wooden bleachers. But you basically stand the whole time because that's just the way that crowd is. So you spend most of the time standing is the way that it kind of goes. But that's the thing that would be most important to me. I think, and I asked Ross about this at the spring practice or the fall practice that he always joins us when we broadcast live out there, and we had him on for a couple of segments, and he gave a very genuine answer to this. But the question I asked him was, how do you manage the overall financial burden of being the athletic director at Ohio State and having to find money and create money and charge more and sponsorships and give me money, 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 but also making Ohio State, which is the state university of Ohio, making it accessible for everyone. And he gave a very genuine answer to it, that is a challenge. It's one that he does not take lightly. I think it's going to be a very delicate walk for him over the next few years, especially as we get into figuring out how they're going to improve Ohio Stadium to the point that you don't have letters like this, to the point that the experience is great for everybody. Here's the overarching problem with Ohio Stadium. It's a really old building. It's a really old building. There's certain things you just can't do. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about eventually there's going to have to be a renovation there. It's going to have to be a major one. Is it one where they do like Florida State did or like Kansas did and play in like have like half the field, half the stadium have attendance and fix one side one season and one side the next? Or is it the type of thing where you play one season worth of road of home games on the road and play them around the state, play them in, you know, in Cleveland or Cincinnati or or at lower.com, like that type of thing? Is that something that they have to look into at some point? But this is a train coming down the tracks in a big, big way.
To me, Bo, those options that you just said just don't make sense to me, because every dollar matters right now. So they're not going to want to lose 1 ounce of revenue in ticket prices for this. And I know people, I don't know, even with a renovation, I don't know how you make more bathrooms at the Shoe. I don't know how you make more concession stands at the Shoe. I know people don't want to hear it, but to me, the best thing to do is build a new Shoe while you're, and I don't know where you get the land, I don't know where you do it, but you build a new Shoe while continuing to play in this one. And then once the new one is done, you can switch. Now, are we there? I don't know if we're there yet, but the one thing I do know is the Shoe is over 100 years old. And it's not getting any younger. And you do a renovation, there's going to be more to come to keep it up and update it. And that's just the way it is. We're already talking about a $400 million renovation at Nationwide Arena that's happening just right now. That, and that's 25 years old, 26 years old. So to me, the smart thing, especially in this era of every penny counts, that's what you're going to have to do.
And it's scary because when that day does come, then the accessibility, when the new Shoe comes, it's going to become less for people. The prices are going to be more expensive when it's the new Shoe.
No doubt. You
come into a bunch of new hurdles where going to the game isn't as much about fun as it is probably status at that point. You talk about the businesses that have the suites and all the money stuff really comes into play. And we'll see it soon here with Cleveland and their new stadium. They're going to feel that up in Cleveland of being a First Energy versus the new one is going to be more expensive. But that's one of the things, that the accessibility of being able to get tickets for the everyday guy becomes less and less the newer things get.
I can't see any scenario how they can build a new Shoe. I just don't see it. I don't know where the money, you're talking $2 billion minimum. Minimum. $2 billion. Maybe, I don't know. What is the Northwestern one? Now, that was years ago. Northwestern football stadium cost. Okay, so this one's going to only have 35,000 privately financed, no fat taxpayer funds, 480 million anchor donation from the Ryan family. So the Ryan family gave 480, but what's the total cost?
So I'm seeing $862 million.
Yep.
$862 million for 35,000 seats. So it's going to be $2 billion here, because you're going to have at least, what's minimum seating? 90? 100? So you're talking $2 billion. Where's that coming from? You need an anchor donation of $1 billion just to get it done. So I don't think they're ever building a new Shoe. I think that they are going to try to lipstick a pig this thing the best they can. But can you imagine, Bake, you're in building, contracting, that type of work. Can you imagine walking in to Ohio Stadium as like a renovator, even on the grand scheme, and where do you start?
Exactly.
Where do you start? Like, we could throw $500 million at this and you might not even feel it.
And that's my thing, where are you throwing good money over bad?
I think it's the right point. I just don't see a scenario how they're going to raise $2 billion. But I think that's the thing I think of the more and more. Like, imagine just walking in with a crew and being like, all right, we got $500 million. What's the best way to do this?
Maybe...
Seat backs at every... Okay. Well, that'll cost $110 million. Now, what are we going to do with the rest? Now what? Now what do we tackle?
Kroger is a fine sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Maybe you can ask them to round up for the new Shoe.
Round up for the... Everything's a round up for the new Shoe. Well, you'd make some money that way. Certainly would. Three things on a Monday coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you. We know you love the Buckeyes. We know you love the Jackets. We know you're wearing a red shirt. Just freak the hell out of someone. So bad.
Amazon Business.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
There was a radio show that constantly talked about Ohio State athletics. Well, good news. It's real, baby. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Proud to be your flagship home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Ohio's sports destination.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant.
Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable.
The Fan.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
Game 7 tonight on the ice.
Sure do.
That's a fun one. Buffalo, Montreal.
That whole series has been fun.
That building will be an electric factory tonight. Like the stakes for those two franchises. And does Colorado Vegas start tonight too?
No, that I actually don't even think it's tomorrow. I think they start Wednesday.
Okay. And that's the heavy hitter there.
Yeah, right? they'll start Wednesday, and then the Eastern Conference Finals or that series will start on Thursday.
Did you understand what Torts got fined for? So he's massively fined, and then they pulled a second round pick from Vegas because he was withholding from media. Was that what it was in Vegas?
Yeah, we had this in Thing or Not a Thing today, but we didn't get to it. So the NHL says that your dressing room has to be open to the media for 30 minutes after the game, and also Torts has to talk to the media. They closed their dressing room, and Torts refused to talk to the media. A couple players did like come outside and talk, but the whole dressing room is supposed to be open in the playoffs, so they hit them big time.
Yeah, they're not going to tolerate it. They're growing the sport that's rating like crazy on ESPN. Take advantage of it. I love Torts, but like, come on now.
It's the playoffs. What are we doing here?
Come on, buddy.
It's just weird after a game seven that they were a game that they won the series, right? They would do that.
Knowing him, I'm sure, and I'm not following the series, but my hunch is that it was retaliatory for something, and he was using it to like rally his guys. One more everybody's against us thing is my guess. And
if you win the cup, who cares?
If you win the cup, who cares? Absolutely. What do you got in the poll today, Bick?
The Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. What was the best sporting event over the weekend? You have 80% going with the Cavs and Pistons Game 7, 20% with the PGA Championship, and a 0% for the Ronda Rousey-Gino Carano MMA debut on Netflix.
I believe that's a Gina Carano.
Or yeah, Gina. I'm saying Gino. Maddie and I
Montana.
Maddie and I were just yelling about the Reds out there, and we were talking about Gino Suarez coming back.
Oh, there you go. There you go. All right, very good. Time for three things. Hit it, guys.
One, two, one, two.
Three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me, my father-in-law, who I adore, incredible man, his birthday was in April. So yesterday, they spent most of the winter in California, so they come back, and yesterday everyone was able to get together for family dinner, and my mother-in-law made him whatever he wanted for dinner. He chose Thanksgiving. Full Thanksgiving spread. Turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes. Now, we all know that I think that's an overrated bird in curds of the turkey, but I love the fact that, A, she said, okay, fine, I'll make Thanksgiving in May, and B, of all the meals that's his favorite homemade, that's number one is remarkable. Great job. Happy 75, Pops. That's great.
I'm not going to lie, I see nothing wrong with that.
No, I didn't either. Frankly. I mean, it's not for me, but like I think that's spectacular. Now, I will say at 82 degrees, it was kind of weird sucking down some stuffing. That was a choice.
First thing for me, Bo, you mentioned the Game 7 tonight in the NHL. If you're a Jackets fan and you're missing some Jackets-related hockey, the World Championships are going on right now. Over the weekend, Team USA got a 5-1 win over Great Britain. In that game, Matthew Olivier, who's wearing an A for Team USA, had a goal and two assists. Now, it's not going so good for Team USA right now as they are losing to Finland 5-1. Team Canada is 2-0 in the World Championships so far. They are scoreless right now with Denmark. Jet Greaves is the goaltender in that game. It is his second game out of three for Canada in this tournament. He got a win in his first one. And also, the Cleveland Monsters are still alive in the AHL playoffs. They're heading to Toronto. Their series with them is tied at one game apiece. They will play on Wednesday night as well. So still some Jackets hockey, related hockey going on.
First thing for me over the weekend, I'm not a big try something new when I go out to eat. That's too much of a risk for me. If I'm going to order something at a restaurant, I have to know that I'm going to like it. I'm a cheapo. I can't order something and not like it. But over the weekend, I got an opportunity to try something I've wanted to order at restaurants many a times. Hamburger with a fried egg on it. Never had it in my life.
Really?
Love it. And every time I would go out to eat, I would always see it. I'm like, I feel like I would like that, but I never had the strength to risk it and order it, because if I didn't like it, then I'm out $15 or whatever it is. Had it yesterday at a cookout, so now I can officially order it at restaurants because I know that I like it. So that was a huge win for me over the weekend.
Didn't have the strength. That's great. Number two for me, I'm always interested in number stuff, and I see the Browns just putting out on their social channels that Casey Concepcion is going to wear number one. He was going to wear number 17, was issued 17, and that was his number, and Quinshon Judkins was going from 10 to 1. Well, now he's in one, so is Judkins staying at 10? Now, they've already given that to Justin Jefferson, who's a linebacker, because anticipating Quinshon was going to go to one. And I'm sure just Quinshon's going to stay at 10. They'll move the linebacker. But I do think that was interesting because Quinshon was set for one.
Casey Concepcion paying up big time, huh?
Strange. I don't know. Something's up there.
We talked about the Buckeye baseball team and the run they're on. Don't miss them tomorrow night as they begin Big Ten play in Omaha. Opening round, they're taking on Washington. We will have all the action for you right here on The Fan. The late start time here on The Fan of 9:55 p.m.
Jeez.
Good luck, Tyler. That'll be a late night for you. Coming up next, we got Rothman and Ice, 1 p.m. The floor is yours. Your chance to come on the air, celebrate the Cavs, rue the Reds yesterday, pump up the Gardos. Coming up at 2:30, we got Ian Fitzsimmons joining Rothman and Ice, talking some college football.
Well, you have that to look forward to, which is nice. We're up against it. No time for three today. We are back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
We've been your Jackets flagship station since day one. All the goals, all the action, all the memories. Your home for the Columbus Blue Jackets, The Fan, Ohio Sports.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.